The Volume.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back. New episode, Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. And we are loaded up on this show. We begin with Keith Idek, senior writer over at BoxingScene.com. A lot of news in boxing this week from the Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury press conference. Teofimo Lopez, George Kambosos is off because of COVID-19. Jermall Charlo and Jaime Munguia, they are back in action this weekend. And Oscar De La Hoya, he has a new opponent for September. We talk about that and much more with Keith Idek. We also get into some gambling stuff later in the show. Malik Smith from the Action Network, he joins me to talk about some of the best bets that you can make this weekend. And finally, Anderson Silva, the legendary MMA fighter, he is going to become another crossover sport candidate when he moves from MMA to boxing to take on Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. this weekend. I talked to Silva about how he came to this decision. Why should anyone believe that Silva, who has never boxed, can beat Chavez? Tries to explain that and more. As always, best way to support this podcast, subscribe, rate, review. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. All right, on to the show. All right, Keith Idek is here, friend of the podcast, BoxingScene.com. He is not with me in El Paso, Texas, however. Was this a tough call, Keith, to miss the trip to El Paso for Jaime Munguia, Camille Zaramata?
Very much so. You know, it was either El Paso, Houston, well, could have been Miami until Tuesday, and I opted to stay in New Jersey, so.
That's fair. That's fair. You are missing, I believe it's going to be 104 today in El Paso. But it's a dry heat, so it's a
104. Wow. Stay inside.
Balmy 104 here. So, yes, I will be staying inside for the most part. But glad you're here. A lot to get into this week. We had an interesting press conference with Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. You mentioned the issues with Teofimo Lopez's lightweight title defense down in Florida. Jermall Charlo, the middleweight title holder, back in action. And Oscar De La Hoya, he's coming back. Got a fight scheduled for September. We're going to get into that. But I want to begin, Keith, with the Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder presser. On Tuesday, Fury and Wilder were face-to-face for the first time since February of 2020 when Fury stopped Wilder to take his version of the heavyweight title. In the time since, Deontay Wilder has accused Fury of loading his gloves for that fight. He has accused Fury of manipulating his gloves for that fight. He has accused Fury of scratching his eardrum, causing it to bleed. But when given the chance, Keith, to confront Fury directly, Wilder stayed largely silent, including during a five-minute-plus stare-down at the end of the 25-minute press event. So, Keith, what did you make of the Fury-Wilder 3 presser?
Well, obviously an odd tack to take for Deontay Wilder in the sense that you're trying to promote a pay-per-view event that did less business than everyone thought that it was going to do the second time around. So you want to try to promote the fight better than he did. He kind of left that all to Tyson Fury, which Tyson Fury has said that he felt that he carried the second promotion, but Wilder was very vocal during that, you know, whole promotion. He was very accessible. There's a much better way to go about it than he did, Chris. I mean, sitting there with headphones on it, basically ignoring Christina Poncher, who was the moderator of the press conference, like he had better things to do, is kind of insulting to everyone involved and is clearly not the way he should have gone about it. And yes, like you said, Chris, when you have made this amount of excuses and some very outlandish accusations, you should be there to answer it. You shouldn't just sit there and just say, oh, I'm not going to answer that. I don't want to talk about that. You're the one who brought all these things up. And it's clearly a bad look for Deontay Wilder to not even have said, well, I'd prefer not to talk about that anymore. That's in the past. I mean, he wasn't even speaking, which is just, a bad look for him. And I'm not sure who advised him to do that. Probably no one, because Deontay Wilder, as Malik Scott mentioned during the press conference, Chris, is a very stubborn person, and you're not going to get him to do something that he doesn't want to do. So I'm sure he had this cooked up in his head that this was the way he was going to go about this, as sort of an FU to everyone involved. Again, if I'm Al Haymon, I'm not entirely thrilled that that's the way he went about it.
Well, there's that, Keith. And it's not like he went the whole day not talking to people. Like, before the press conference, he did a conference call with UK reporters. After the press conference, he had Elie Sekbok in his room doing a video interview. So it's not like he was not talking. He decided to spend this whole day not talking, that he's going dark for the remainder of the promotion. Like, he just decided not to speak in the presence of Tyson Fury. And that struck me as a little weak, being honest. Like, you've got the guy in front of you, the guy you have accused of some of the greatest cheating violations in boxing history. Like, if all these things that Tyson Fury or that Deontay Wilder has articulated are true, it is the greatest cheating scandal in the history of boxing. And to not say anything, to not point at Tyson Fury and say, you did this, you did that. Now, I talked to Shelley Finkel afterwards, and Shelley's rationale was Tyson, or that Wilder didn't want to create like a confrontation, conflict at the press event. Okay, since when is that an issue in boxing? Like, that actually helps juice pay-per-views if stuff like that happens in boxing. I just thought it was a bad look, Keith, for Wilder to be talking before and after the presser. And then when you're looking at the guy that you say you hate, that you say cheated, to say nothing. That just struck me as completely bizarre.
Yeah, and well, I guess on the flip side, Chris, remember from the time he lost to Tyson Fury back in last February, so it's about 15, 16 months ago now, all we wanted was for Deontay Wilder to stop talking because he kept saying all of these crazy things. Well, he finally stopped talking. I guess that's one way to look at it. You know, I guess he didn't make any more excuses or whatever. But I don't know that, you know, the British reporters, I'm sure, did not let him off the hook in terms of which kind of questions they asked him. I did watch Elie Sekbak's interview, and I have a good relationship with Elie, but he didn't ask him about any of those things. And I'm sure that was probably that was a condition of doing the interview, probably, that don't ask, because I'm sure Elie wanted to ask him about all of these things, and he didn't. I mean, so if he knew that was going to be like a safe interview, maybe that's why he agreed to do that one. From Ellie's perspective, he's getting a one-on-one with Deontay Wilder, which is good for his YouTube channel. So I understand him agreeing to it, but he didn't answer any tough questions during that 11 or 12 minute interview. But again, I was not on the call with the British reporters, but I'm sure they did ask him about it. Now, look, he could very easily shut this all down by simply, I'm not saying that's the way he should go about it, but he could say, I'm just not answering any questions about what I said about the gloves or what I said about Mark Breland or what I said about whatever the costume, whatever, you know, the countless list of things he has said since last February. He could just say, I'm not discussing it. And then you could continue to ask him, but know that he's not going to answer.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that too, that, you know, it's one thing for Wilder to say all the things he said to friendly interviewers, which he's been doing up until this point, not getting a lot of pushback on some of his accusations. But in that room, if he had done kind of the usual, people that don't know how these boxing pressers work, you have the stuff that's televised, streamed, and then you break off into small groups and both fighters speak to different reporters. For sure, if Wilder had broken off into a small group and faced some of the actual reporters that were in that room, I know Lance Pugmire, your friend and mine, was in that room. I'm sure Lance would have drilled down on this issue of the gloves. And look, there's no real, he doesn't have any evidence. Like, people keep pointing to that, like, video that was out there. Like, that's not really evidence of loading gloves. It's not evidence of manipulating gloves. Like, I just don't think he would have had answers, Keith, to the questions beyond, like, you saw this, you saw the mark on my head. Like, these are not answers. Like, you know, I would have said to him, if I was sitting one-on-one with him, be like, look, you keep talking about manipulated gloves. The Nevada Commission was in the room when Fury laced up his gloves. Your trainer, Jay Deese, was in the room when Fury laced up his gloves. This is not, you weren't going to some far-flung country where you might be able to get away with certain things. It's tough. For all the critiques I have about Nevada, Keith, like, it's tough to get away with stuff out there. So I just don't think, I honestly don't think he wanted to face scrutiny for some of the things that he ultimately said. That's just my opinion on that, but I think that had something to do with it.
Yeah, no, I think that's clearly what happened there, Chris. He just doesn't want to face the music, so to speak, about anything that he has said over the last 15 or 16 months. And that's clearly his prerogative, but it does not reflect well on him. And when we get to fight week, I don't know how much more availability there's going to be, because he's been very selective about who he speaks to, and that's his right. He can continue to do that if he wants. But during fight week, there are going to be reporters there in the room with him that are going to ask him tough questions. And again, he does not have to answer those questions. He's not under any obligation to do that, but he is going to be asked whether he likes it or not.
Yeah. I mean, I asked to go down to Alabama to spend a couple of days with him. I was turned down for that. He clearly doesn't want people in his camp, or at least not general media in his camp. It's too bad. I mean, as I wrote during the week, I actually like Deontay Wilder a lot. And Deontay Wilder is a life success story no matter what happens with this Fury fight. All he's overcome to get here is just his legacy now is a little bit under scrutiny, a little bit complicated because of all the things that have happened over the last year and a half. All right, Saturday night, Keith, was supposed to be headlined by Teofimo Lopez's lightweight title defense against George Gambosis. However, that fight has been postponed after Lopez tested positive for COVID-19. That did not sit well with Gambosis, who called Lopez irresponsible for not getting vaccinated. It's worth noting that Lopez's own promoter, Bob Arum, who continues to alienate Lopez in several different ways, he said something similar to that effect. Keith, does Gambosis have a point with his, I don't want to call it outrage, but displeasure at Teofimo Lopez for not protecting himself against this type of outcome?
Yes, but it's my understanding that Gambosis refused to get vaccinated also. So I don't know. They're both taking a huge risk with that type of money at stake. So I don't know why either of them would not have gotten vaccinated. People have their opinions. And of course, it's not the law in the United States to get vaccinated, but you do have a responsibility for the people that you're in business with, especially I think as it pertains to the fighters on the undercard, because there were 12 fights altogether on this card. So you have 22 fighters on the undercard that are making nowhere near $3.9 million and $2.2 million, you know, the purses for Lopez and Gambosis. And now they're out all these training expenses. And yes, most of them, I'm assuming all of them, are supposed to fight on August 14th when this fight is rescheduled. But what if they don't? A million things could happen to all of the fighters involved over these next 2 months, and then they could be out of payday. So it's just, it is irresponsible to an extent, whatever your personal beliefs might be. And from a business perspective, it is downright dumb, to be honest with you. I mean, it's just not. Now, one thing I will say is they had not sold a lot of tickets to this event. So bringing this card to a smaller venue in 2 months might work out from a financial standpoint for the promoter, whoever's on the hook there for renting the venue and everything, because that is a very expensive venue to rent. The Miami Marlins Stadium is a huge venue. Too big of a venue, obviously, for a fight of this magnitude, because they had not sold a lot of tickets, as I said. So best probably that it's somewhere else. Also better that it is not competing with four other boxing cards on the same day. Although your card starts in the afternoon and would not directly compete with it, there are three other events, including, well, I don't know what we want to call this Chavez thing, but it is a pay-per-view boxing event. I don't know who's watching that exactly, but
Hey, Anderson Silva is coming up on the show later on. So there's my tease.
Right. Well, hopefully he won't beat me up for saying that, but all kidding aside, Chris, there are two. Now, Jermall Charlo is obviously is a huge favorite against Juan Macias Montiel on Showtime. Naoya Inoue is a huge favorite against Michael Desmarinas on ESPN, but they are popular polarizing fighters, however you want to phrase it, on cable networks in the United States. So there's a ton of competition for the Lopez Cambosis fight. And again, probably better that it's not going on this night. But just to circle back to Lopez, while I would have liked to have seen him get vaccinated and not put everyone else in this position, Teofimo Lopez is a great kid and obviously has asthma. So this can be a troublesome situation for him more so than other people. So obviously we're all hoping that he gets back to full health as soon as possible and is able to train and get back into this fight and get into the ring on August 14th.
Yeah, it's a personal choice to get vaccinated or not. I mean, I personally think everybody should. I think there's enough scientific evidence to suggest that it's safe. I didn't know that Cambosis had not been vaccinated. I thought he was. I don't know. We're kind of discussing this in real time, but I initially thought he was vaccinated. Either way, as you kind of look forward, though, Keith, it almost feels like this needs to be like there needs to be some contractual protection for situations like this. Like if you are a fighter who has been vaccinated and you're going up against a fighter that is not, it seems to me like this is like a new wrinkle to contracts. Like you have to find a way to protect yourself because stuff like this is going to happen. Like COVID-19 is not going anywhere. Like it's been significantly reduced, thank God, but it's still going to be a lingering issue. Hell, I covered the NBA. Chris Paul contracted it. Like this is like a real thing that's still going to be present. And I think if you're a boxer, because so much money goes into building these events, and for the fighter itself, like, I mean, George Kambosos was probably close to 135 pounds when this fight was called off. He had talked about how he was bringing his pregnant wife over and all the things that had gone into it. Like, you got to find a way to protect yourself financially, I think, if you're going up against a fighter that is choosing not to be vaccinated. Not like people can do what they want, but you know, in professional sports, it seems to me that like these promoters and managers have to now incorporate that into contract talks, because I wouldn't be surprised if something like this happens again.
Yeah, and I think it would be terrible business if they did not put that type of language in a contract, Chris, because look, if you, if you work anywhere, Walmart or wherever you work, and you don't want to, and you're not obligated to get vaccinated and you don't want to for whatever reason, that's your right not to do that. But if your employer, and in this case, the promoter would be the employer, says, well, you can't do this unless you get vaccinated, it is not your right as an American to sign a boxing contract to make $4 million. That is not your right at all. And people get that confused oftentimes when they say, even going into a store or something, well, I'm an American. No, this is a private business. And if they're requiring me to do X, Y, and Z to come in, you either do that or you can't come in. It is not your right as an American to go into Target or wherever. So the same principles apply here. If you don't want to do it, well, no one can force you to do it, but then you're not going to make, in this case, an enormous sum of money for both boxers. But you know, even lesser, you know, $1 million or $700,000. These are still huge sums of money. And there's a lot of financial risk involved for promoters, which is what Bob Arum was alluding to the other day. He said he has been assured that Deontay Wilder, by Shelley Finkel, that Deontay Wilder has been double vaccinated. He's fully vaccinated and ready to go. Tyson Fury has done the same thing. So, of course, many things could happen, Chris, as we get closer to July 24th. One of them, unfortunately, could suffer an injury. There's a multitude of things that could happen that could cause a postponement, but at least they're removing that potential complication from the mix. And it's just a smart thing to do. So guys have to be responsible and professional and do that. Or you end up in a situation like Teofimo Lopez and George Kambosos are in now, where their fight has been, it's already been postponed 2 weeks, which you can kind of deal with when you're in training camp. You can just slow things down a little bit and then ramp it back up as you get closer to the fight. But a 2 month postponement, you're kind of in a weird position because you have to take a few weeks off and then kind of get back into camp. And then it becomes a matter of where you overtrained. I mean, there's so many things here at play with the fight just being postponed 2 months.
Yeah, I agree. It sucks for the fighters, but to your earlier point, they were not moving tickets. Like this could have been a lot of giveaways, freebies. This was not going to be a well-attended event down in Florida. It will not be in South Florida when it's rescheduled. In fact, Nichols worth of free advice for promoters there. I mean, go to Vegas for this. Like August 14th is smack dab in the middle of NBA Summer League. Like you want like some media types there, exposure. It's also the week before Pacquiao versus Spence. Like, I mean, there's myriad reasons to put this fight in Vegas in mid-August. Maybe collect yourself a little, a fee of some kind, a site fee from some small casino, and just do it that way. Like, just don't roll the dice on, you know, some outdoor venue in Texas or Florida or wherever just to put on a show. I mean, it's they were going to put on a big show. Like, my understanding was Teofimo Lopez was going to come out on an elephant. Like, he was going to ride an elephant out into the arena, like kind of the greatest showman type of thing. Like, yeah. You know, they were going to do something big. Great, but like put that stuff aside. Like, just do an event that's well-attended and, you know, in the right spot.
Chris, is there going to be a point when these thriller pay-per-views are focused on the fights? I mean, we're talking about all these I get it that there's a market for these musical acts and everything, but you have a 12-fight card and then you're putting musical acts in between and you don't need to ride into the ring on an elephant. I mean, just walk into the ring. Like, what are we doing here at a certain
point? Also seems kind of dangerous.
I mean, wild animal, you're going to ride into the – God forbid if he falls off or so. Who knows what could happen. But, Chris, I don't think they were expecting to sell – I think the Miami Marlins Stadium for baseball anyway holds, and of course there would have been seats on the field and everything, but I think it holds in the 40s for baseball. I don't think they were expecting to sell anywhere near that many tickets, but I think they kind of needed a stadium setting to some extent for the musical acts, all the setup that they have and everything, so that be as part of it. But it just doesn't seem like that. And how many times are you going to go to Miami has been long been a bad market for boxing. And now fights are going to Miami pretty frequently as if it's a good market for boxing, and it's not. I was at the Mayweather-Paul event. I haven't gotten a straight answer in terms of how many tickets they actually sold, but it wasn't a lot. Nowhere near full capacity. Who knows how many tickets they gave away. Of course, it rained on and off during the event, which doesn't help. The bottom line is it's not a good market for boxing, and put the fight indoors where it's not going to rain on people if they're paying money to go see the fights.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a deeply popular Cuban boxer, maybe you can start to build him up in Miami. I get that. But other than that, it's not a great market for fights. All right, also on Saturday, your favorite fighter and mine, Jermall Charlo, will defend his WBC middleweight title against the formidable Juan Macias Montiel. Sorry, my bad, Juan. Montiel's best win came in his last fight when he knocked out James Kirkland, or at least what was left of James Kirkland. Before that, he fought journeyman Hugo Centeno to a draw. Before that, he was pancaked by Jaime Munguia. When asked this week about bigger fights in his future, Charlo said this.
I'm not chasing Canelo. I don't care about Canelo. Golovkin, I don't care about Golovkin. I don't care. I don't care. I care about Montiel. I don't care. Look, if they want to fight me, they're going to make the call. I'm with the best in the world. I got the best trainers in the world. I got the best organization in the world. Showtime put on the best show. And I know the WBC going to make it happen. So if he want to fight me, we fight. If not, then, hey, I'm not worried about that. My career keeps going.
Keith, I can't anymore with Jermall Charlo. He is a tremendously talented fighter, but this will be his seventh fight at middleweight. And by my count, it will be his fifth, basically, gimme. Meanwhile, you have Demetrius Andrade begging to face him. You have David Benavidez begging to face him. And Charlo not really showing any interest in facing them or anyone at the highest of levels. Does this guy want to fight anyone at this point? What's your read on Jermall Charlo?
I think he fought Derevianchenko in his last fight, which was clearly his toughest opponent at middleweight and maybe the best opponent of his career.
It was, Keith, but like, I can't sit here and say Derevianchenko is King Kong in this situation. Like, he's a quality name fighter, but he had been beaten up in his last couple of fights, and I think that takes something out of you.
The thing I would say, Chris, is that in Derevianchenko's previous fight, if I'm remembering this correctly, you had Derevianchenko beating Golovkin.
Correct.
And it was a fantastic fight. I think it was unquestionably the fight of the year, despite that the Inoue Donaire fight won the award for some organizations or whatever. But I thought it was clearly the best action fight of 2019. And you could clearly make the argument that Derevianchenko won the fight. So I guess what I'm saying is, while Derevianchenko is not nearly as big of a star as Gennady Golovkin, it's a tough fight in the sense that if you want him to fight Gennady Golovkin and you don't know what's left of Gennady Golovkin after he fought Derevianchenko, and the same principle applies to Derevianchenko, could have taken a lot out of him too. But
I still don't know what's left of Golovkin at this point. Like, honestly, you don't know anything about Kamaru Usman. Right. Like, that did nothing. That shows you nothing.
And somehow, Kamaru, I understand that Selecki pulled out of But how is Kamaru Usman is fighting Jaime Munguia beyond me. But nevertheless, it's a really good win for Charlo, and I don't think it's fair necessarily to criticize him for fighting. Derevianchenko is the best middleweight that he has fought. So that's a very good win for him. Now he's going backward here, and it depends on who you ask, I guess. And it would seem to me that the Andrade fight, and this is going to be music to your ears, is there to be made in the sense that if DAZN is willing to pay a lot of money for it, then he should be able to fight on DAZN. You can't make the excuse that, you know, I think he said at some point, no, I know he said at some point that he makes $7 million anyway, which he does not. He's well compensated, but he's not making $7 million to fight Juan Macias Montiel or Dennis Hogan, you know,
Brandon Adams. Yeah.
Those kinds of fights. So point being, the Andrade fight is the one it's a unification fight. Andrade wants the fight. Charlo says he wants the fight. So whoever's willing to pay the most for it should be able to televise it or stream it or whatever. I don't think that Golovkin wants to fight Charlo. He certainly does not want to fight Andrade. And now he's going to be busy taking some sort of tune-up fight, so to speak, later in the summer, and then fighting Murata in December. So he's tied up until next spring at the earliest. Charlo would have to move up to 168 to fight Canelo, who clearly is more focused and understandably on becoming the undisputed 168-pound champion. So for now, the Golovkin and Canelo fights are not available to him. So let's just take that off the table. The Andrade fight does seem like it would be available. Jaime Munguia is the number one contender for Charlo's title. Now, I think Jaime Munguia deserves some criticism here too, because I've been told that he is not interested in fighting Andrade. He's the number one contender for his title also, and has turned that fight down. So I don't know that he would be interested in fighting Charlo either. So I don't know that for sure, but he is the number one contender. I would like to see Charlo fight Munguia, and I'm sure you would as well. So if there's blame to go around, I don't know, and I'm not defending Charlo's list of opponents at middleweight, but there could be blame to go around to other people, other promoters, other networks as well. Bottom line is no one wants to see him fight Juan Macias Montiel on Saturday. He's a big puncher. I mean, he's won every win that he has as a professional, all 22 of them have come by knockout. But as Charlo pointed out during the press conference yesterday, he used the word washed to describe James Kirkland, and that's fair. And like you said earlier, Chris, that's the biggest win of Montiel's career, in the sense that Kirkland has name recognition and was once a formidable fighter and once a very dangerous puncher that people didn't want to fight, clearly should not be boxing anymore. So I don't even know how good of a win. I mean, it looks good on his resume, but how good of a win was it really? I mean, he demolished him, and Kirkland got up from that third knockdown. I watched the fight, all 1 minute and 56 seconds of it, a couple times this week. He literally said when he got up from that third knockdown, he literally said, "What just happened?" They didn't even know where he was. Blood was pouring from it. It's kind of a sad sight, really. But so I don't really even know how good that win was. But yeah, it's another kind of gimme for Charlo. It's a step backward from Derevianchenko. But the one thing I will say about the Derevianchenko fight was very impressive to me, Chris, in the sense that he beat him much more convincingly than Daniel Jacobs and certainly Golovkin. I mean, Golovkin might have lost the fight. So he deserves a lot of credit for that win, but then is kind of fighting another opponent like Hogan or Brandon Adams now.
Yeah, I mean, I'll concede that you know, he deserves a lot of credit for the way he beat Derevianchenko. But it's like, what does that entitle you to? Like, does it entitle you to face, you know, two gimmies in 2020? Like, honestly, I don't even know if Charlo will fight again in 2021. Like, you know, he's fighting in June now. To your point, like, the names he really wants, Golovkin and Canelo, are tied up and unavailable unless Canelo, like, decides, let's say hypothetically Canelo beats Caleb Plant and wants to go again in December, which he may want to do. Maybe he wants Charlo then, I don't know, but it seems more likely you see Canelo against somebody else. And then what? Like, what's available to Charlo? Like, he's not going to fight Benavidez. I think that's pretty clear at this point. And the Andrade fight's been there for him for years now, for at least a year and a half. I don't see any sense of urgency in this guy. And I understand he makes a lot of money, and he's able to keep his title, and he stays undefeated. But at some point, you've got to chase legacy, don't you? Or chase, like, real fights. And I feel like Eddie Hearn has done a decent job boxing Charlo in a bit, basically saying, like, you paid Derevianchenko $3 million. We'll take that. Like, Andre will take that to fight you. You say you won't fight on DAZN. We'll go over and fight on Showtime. It feels like, now, Eddie doesn't have many options here because Andre is out of opponents as well, but they've kind of boxed Charlo in a little bit, saying, like, you hate in boxing to use the word duck, but, like, they've kind of reached the point where if you don't fight Andrade, you have to be called the ducker in that instance, because Andrade's doing, I think, anything you possibly can to get that fight to happen.
Yeah, and if I'm Charlo, and I don't think that Charlo is a quote-unquote afraid to fight people. I mean,
no fighter's afraid. No fighter is ever afraid to get in the ring.
Especially a guy at the highest level. I mean, he's an elite, right. He's an elite level middleweight, so I don't think that's necessarily the case. But and I think, to your point, Chris, I think Eddie Hearn would love it if Showtime were willing to put up the guarantee so that DAZN doesn't have to pay for that fight. Because I don't know what it's – while he has previously offered $7 million for the fight, you know, for one of the fighters, I don't know that the fight is necessarily worth that much money in terms of what the return you would get on your investment. So and the financial situation at DAZN has changed since that offer was made a couple of years ago. I think the whole world has changed to some degree. So in terms of what's available financially for people. So I would like to see it because it's a unification fight and both guys kind of need an interesting opponent. And yes, I would like to see that fight. The thing that concerns me a little bit about Jermall Charlo, and certainly not about Jermell Charlo because he's on his way to cleaning out the junior middleweight division, and credit to him for that. I would just hate to see these. They're now 31 years old. So you don't want to see him get into a situation where you're getting toward Terrence Crawford's age. Yes, you're still in your physical prime, and yes, you're still an elite fighter, and people think you might beat this guy, and you'll definitely beat this guy, or you might lose to that guy or whatever. And then you're at the back end of your physical prime, and you're not going to take those fights until it might be too late. Because I think that's kind of where we're getting with Terrence Crawford. Not to get off track here, but Terrence Crawford will be 34 years old in September. And, you know, Charlo's only 31, but, I mean, this has been going on for a few years here. So he's getting toward the back end of his physical prime.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to take advantage of these years. Like, you've got to be out there fighting the best, putting yourself in position. It's not complicated. Hopefully we see more from Jermall Charlo the rest of 2021. So as I mentioned, Keith, I am in lovely El Paso for Saturday afternoon's Golden Boy show, headlined by Jaime Munguia and Camille Zaremeta. To your earlier point, this is not a great fight. Zaremeta was destroyed by Gennady Golovkin last December. The only caveat I can add to that is to say, in fairness to Munguia here, he had Maciek Selecki pull out twice from this fight. He lost another opponent in Demetrius Ballard to injury, and I get it. Munguia wants to get out. He wants to stay active. He wants to get back in the ring. What I'm looking for in this fight, Keith, is more information about Jaime Munguia, because I don't know what Munguia is at this point. I know he is a very strong fighter, a big puncher, even at 160. I thought the Turiano-Johnson fight was evidence of that. But is he skilled enough to compete with the A-level guys, talking about Andrade and Charlo and Golovkin, and maybe Canelo down the line, because that certainly would be a mouth-watering opponent for Munguia in an all-Mexican type of showdown. So as you look at what Munguia is now, 24 years old, unbeaten, former junior middleweight champion, but untested largely at both weight classes, do you see like a future A-level fighter there? Or do you see a guy that just has pop, is popular, but lacks the tools to be elite?
Well, I see a fighter who has the very same defensive deficiencies that he has always had. So when you start fighting guys, let's just say like Jermall Charlo or Gennady.
You mean Eric Morales hasn't changed that? Eric Morales, the noted defensive tactician?
No. I haven't seen much changes in his defensive game, unfortunately. But Chris, as you well know, we're not going to find anything out about Jaime Munguia on Saturday that we don't know. Kamaru Zaramata has fought one top middleweight, and Gennady Golovkin destroyed him, knocked him down four times in four separate rounds. Never should have been the IBF's mandatory challenger for Golovkin's middleweight title. And they're in a tough situation here in the sense that they had to get an opponent on short notice. Zaleski has pulled out of the fight twice for sketchy reasons, as far as I can tell.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other point is that, as you well know, Chris, the zone is available in Poland. So I guess in this case, if you were Polish, it was good enough to fight Munguia on Saturday. So he might be the only other Polish middleweight contender that like is even ranked. So maybe that's how they came up with this. I don't know, but
Tomas Adamak couldn't make 160, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not a great fight. Unfortunately, I think the co-feature on the DAZN show is very interesting. Gabe Rezac, yep. The Bully. I mean, that's a fantastic fight, but I'm looking forward to that. But I know you're going to ask him after the fight, after he demolishes Kamaru Zaramata. I know you're going to ask him, well, you're the number one contender for Andrade. You're the number one contender for Charlo. Why not fight one of those guys? I mean, and I don't know what his answer is going to be, but just like we'd like to get answers from Jermall Charlo and we'd like to get answers from Deontay Wilder about the things we've already discussed, I'd love to get some answers from Jaime Munguia, because you're the number one contender for two middleweight titles and you apparently don't want to fight either of these guys. Why not? He's not fighting Canelo anytime soon. I know that once upon a time was the plan to get him in the ring with Canelo. And Canelo, I mean, I don't know what would have been left of Jaime Munguia if he fought Canelo. But I understood it from a business standpoint because, you know, they're Mexicans and you could make it a big fight on Cinco de Mayo or a Mexican Independence Day weekend. I got it. But now that Golden Boy is no longer in business with Canelo, I mean, that ship seemingly has sailed. So get him in a real middleweight fight, in a fight that people want to see. And then we'll get the answer to the question that you originally asked me. Like, when and what are we going to find out about Jaime Munguia?
Now, I was impressed with how he finished Turiano-Johnson. Turiano-Johnson is a gatekeeper type, but he's been in with some top guys. He has some quality wins on his resume. Came into that fight with a lot of confidence. He had Andre Rogier in his corner, and Munguia basically broke his face, like busted his lip up in probably the nastiest lip cut I've ever seen. So you give him credit for that. That's a legitimate stoppage in that fight. I guess the only thing I'd look at in the Zaramata fight is, you know, can Munguia finish Zaramata faster than Golovkin did? Which may not even be a fair comparison, because I believe that Golovkin carried, you know, Zaramata a little bit in that fight last December to get some rounds in, because he had been off for over a year at that point. So even that might not show us anything. But I'm with you. You got to see Munguia in with somebody. He's got that number one contender status. He can force a mandatory fight. And even if he couldn't, Keith, he's a popular guy. And popularity leads to bigger fights. Like if you're Demetrius Andrade, even if you're the mandatory, you might not get a big fight. Jaime Munguia, you are, because you can sell some tickets, you drive some ratings. There's no reason Munguia can't be or shouldn't be in a big fight before the end of the year. So you're right. That's an obvious question for him right after. Will we see him in before the end of the year against the top guy? All right, I want to finish with Oscar De La Hoya, the head of Golden Boy Promotions, who is officially getting back in the ring in September. He now has an opponent for his ring return. It is none other than Vitor Belfort, the 44-year-old former UFC light heavyweight champion who has been inactive himself for the last 3 years. De La Hoya Belfort will take place on September 11th, likely in Las Vegas. It will be an exhibition fight with both fighters wearing 12-ounce gloves. So, Keith, what is your level of excitement for De La Hoya versus Belfort?
My level of excitement is zero. But look, there's a market for this stuff, Chris. And look, Oscar has been saying for 10-plus years probably that he was going to fight again, you know, in real, before this exhibition type of stuff became a thing. He was talking about, and he was much younger, of course, he was talking about fighting real guys. You know, there was a list of guys that I'm going to come back and fight him and him and him and him, and it never happened. You know, he promised you multiple times on your show that he was going to come back and fight a real opponent. Well, he's not fighting a real opponent in the sense.
You mentioned Golovkin. You talked about Golovkin.
Yeah, I mean, he said a lot of things that turned out to be far from the case, the truth here. But I don't blame him. He's 48 years old, and he hasn't fought in 12 and a half years. I don't know who we should expect him to fight, but I don't know. There's the market for these things, and nostalgia is a very powerful thing, Chris. If you're a huge Oscar De La Hoya fan, you might love to see him. You might pay $50 to see him in the ring one more time. I don't know why necessarily against a guy like Belfort, who's 44 years old, has been knocked out 7 times, has been retired from MMA for 3 years, was never a boxer. I don't understand that exactly. Like, what would, if you don't want to pay $75 for real high level fights, like, you know, Fury, Wilder, Spence, Pacquiao, and you're complaining about that, I don't know why you would want to pay 50 or whatever the price point will be for this to see what is an exhibition between a guy who was never a boxer and a guy who hasn't fought since I had hair on my head. But who knows? There is a market for it, so it's going to continue until that market dries up. But I don't know what we're supposed to get out of that. I mean, if Oscar De La Hoya goes in there, even at 48, I mean, he's pushing 50 years old here, and beats up Vitor Belfort, so what? Like, who cares? Like, what is the purpose of it? If he got in there with someone that he fought, like, here's what I would like to see. If we're going to see something like this, I would like to see Oscar De La Hoya and Fernando Vargas fighting him. If we're going to do something like this, make it that. Vargas is younger than De La Hoya by, I think, 4 or 5 years, but he's older also and has not fought in a very long time. Something like that, I think, would generate more interest than something like what we're going to see on September 11th.
You know, I Oscar is not fighting the kind of opponent he said he was. I'm good with that, though. I have no interest in seeing Oscar De La Hoya get beat up. Right. Like, he's in his late 40s. That doesn't do anything for me. Like, that, and that's kind of...
I'm sorry to cut. He shouldn't be fighting at all. Almost 50 years old.
No, I agree. I agree. He shouldn't be in any kind of real fight. So this, fine. Like, if he can make a couple of bucks off it, I've said this many times, these types of fights are the new autograph signing. Like, you can make some money doing stuff like this. Go ahead and do it. And it's very low risk. I'll tell you what's funny is after this fight was announced, and you probably get some of these emails too. I got some gambling site emails. Like, the odds are basically even for this fight. De La Hoya Belfort, like, I'm not here to be a gambling expert, but if you think Vitor Belfort is going to beat Oscar De La Hoya, I don't care how old De La Hoya is, you're crazy. You're crazy. Oscar De La Hoya can still punch like a boxer. Vitor Belfort has never been a boxer. Like, that's wild. So if there's actual money to be made on De La Hoya, I happily jump in on the back end of that. But this is, it just is what it is. It's, if you are feeling nostalgic about seeing an all-time great back in the ring, by all means, go and do it. But other than that, there's no real upset for it. I do wonder, too, Keith, that, like, is De La Hoya, because he's been visible over the years, and sometimes not in the most positive of ways, is he going to have the same type of attraction, the magnetic pull that a Tyson had, or some of these other former you know, greats have had? I don't think so. I think, you know, people kind of like missed Mike Tyson. I don't know that they missed De La Hoya quite as much.
Yeah, and then another thing related to Belfort, Chris, is he's been knocked out 7 times. And when he was a much younger man, it was an MMA, of course, but he was a much younger person in his physical prime, and he was knocked out, not all 7 times, but some of those knockouts came when he was young. So I don't know what you would be expecting from him in this quote-unquote fight, but yeah, and I agree with you in the sense that Oscar's image has absorbed a lot of damage, I think is maybe even an understatement over the years. So, and he's not fighting someone who people care about him fighting. So I don't really know. Yes, he's still a star that resonates with mainstream people outside of the boxing world. Are those kinds of people going to buy this? I don't know why they would exactly. I don't, because again, what is the purpose? Like if he wins, who cares? I mean, he's supposed to win and he's not, it's not like it's going to lead to him coming back and fighting real people. And he, and again, he should not be doing that. Mm-hmm. 50 shouldn't be doing that. His career, you know, he had an amazing career, fought everybody, 6-division champion, a Hall of Famer, one of the best fighters of his generation, but it's over. I mean, what, you know, I mean, it's, and he's free to do whatever he wants, of course. And if he can cash in on his name a little bit, more power to him, I guess. But I just don't see the point of it, just as I didn't really. Now, Floyd Mayweather told all of us before this exhibition, I'm not looking at this as a real fight. You shouldn't look at it as a real fight. We're just going to go in there and move around or whatever. He told people what it was, you know, I mean, and I'm sure De La Hoya is not treating this like when he fought Bernard Hopkins in 2004 or many of the other fights, the real fights that he had, when he fought Mayweather, Vargas, and many others. So it's not like he's trying to sell it as a real fight, but it's just like Mayweather said, that this kind of is what it is. And over 1 million people bought it. And who knows how many people stole the stream. You know, I mean, people were interested in it because Logan Paul was this polarizing YouTube guy who was much younger and much bigger. Belfort doesn't even have that going for him because he's not much younger and he's not nearly as popular as Logan Paul in the grand scheme of it.
No, Mayweather found the perfect opponent for him. And it worked out financially, I'm sure, for him. But as you know, being down there, Floyd's not doing that again. I think Floyd got his fill of the exhibition against bigger guys experience at 44 years old. I don't think he's – like, it'll be easier. Like, De La Hoya, he is going to probably violently knock out Belfort. Like, I think that's the most – like, I think he's still going to be able to summon the power to get a stoppage in a fight like this. But – you know, it doesn't mean anything, to your point. It means nothing. Like, this is a guy that doesn't, you know, that doesn't box and has never taken a punch like that. It's totally different to take shots in combat sports than taking it in a boxing ring. So if Oscar can make some money, good for him. But again, just like with Floyd, go in with measured expectations. Like, right. Lower the bar for what you are about to see. Keith, always appreciate your time, man. You can read Keith's stuff over at BoxingScene.com. Follow him on social media, at IDECBoxing on Twitter. Always good to catch up, man.
Always, Chris. Try to stay indoors there in El Paso.
I'll look for you on Press Row. I'll leave a little platelet for you. You'll be there. There's still time.
I'll send you a picture from my couch.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddy, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddy as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so as this podcast moves forward, we're going to do a little more gambling stuff, especially when we get into busy fight weekends, which we have coming up this weekend. Three major cards on major networks, plus you have kind of an exhibition match down in Mexico. To talk about that and much more, I want to bring in Malik Smith. He's a senior editor for Combat over at the Action Network. Malik, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, so I'm still getting used to the gambling space, to be honest with you. Yeah, I'm doing a little bit of it here and there. You know, the fights that I call for DAZN, I try not to get too involved with because that represents kind of a conflict. But when I'm at another fight, like if I hear something, I see something, I get into it. Like, just tell me this, like how big a gambling space is boxing? I kind of want to open with that. Like how significant is it?
Well, I think there are the same way that boxing is a bit niche for people who watch it. I think it's pretty niche for people to bet on. I would say, you know, it's as the popularity of the sport kind of ebbs and flows. And when there are huge fights, obviously you see a ton of attention, a ton of money being thrown at big fights. Floyd Mayweather and Logan Paul fight was one that you couldn't actually bet on. But overseas, you know, there was a ton of money being thrown because you were allowed to bet on it there. So, you know, when there is huge names, Wilder Fury 3 is one that I would imagine will get a ton of attention from casual fans and for people who bet on boxing regularly. You know, I think that's when you're going to see a ton of people talking about fight lines and different ways to get money down on some of these fights. As this weekend's fights, I don't know that there's going to be a ton of people running to bet some of these fights, but you know, it's still something that if you can find a good opportunity to snag a good line here or there, it can be worthwhile.
Oh, no, it is a fairly, like I said, it's a busy weekend, but there are some pretty heavy front runners in all these fights, whether it's Jermall Charlo against Montiel, Inoue against Das Marinas. You've got Munguia against Camille Zaremeta. You know, these are fights that you can fairly easily predict the outcome of each. But, you know, what about kind of parlaying the money line prices of each of these big favorites? Like, is there some action there?
So at the Action Network, we try to make sure that we, you know, give folks the best advice that we possibly can when it comes to betting, right? Like, we want smart bettors because obviously we at the Action Network are very, very heavy into betting pretty much anything from boxing to the NBA to the NFL to darts. And that's not a joke. We do like darts. So in theory, you really shouldn't parlay anything, right? Like, that's, you're basically saying all however many events you're betting on are have to happen for you to win your bet. But in the case of, you know, this weekend's fights, you have Charlo, who's minus 3,000. You have Munguia, who's minus 2,500. You have Inoue, who's minus 2,000. So obviously betting those fights individually doesn't really do much for you. I did this practice just for the heck of it. I even threw in Michaela Mayer's money line just to see if that could, you know, potentially make it more valuable if you parlayed all of these. A four-leg parlay with Charlo, Mejia, Inoue, and Mayer get you odds at -625. So if you put $100 down, you'd win $15. So I won't make the judgment that that's something you shouldn't do, but you know, anything can happen, as you know, in boxing. It is a very interesting sport. And sometimes things don't go the way that you expect them to go. Perfect example, last weekend, Shakur Stevenson, who I'm a huge fan of, shout out to Newark. I very much expected him to knock out his opponent. He was -250 to knock out his opponent. So like a fool, I parlayed that with a ton of UFC things that I was very, very confident in. And of course, like every parlay that I've ever put money on, the last leg, which was Stevenson, was the one that I needed to complete the parlay. And of course, he did not knock out his opponent. So parlays are, sometimes they seem like they can be, you know, an easy way to kind of get some money down, but you need every single thing to hit. And in boxing, sometimes you just don't get it. But with these money lines as wide as they are, I feel like that's probably the best way to kind of get some sort of value if you plan to bet any of these fights at all. As of right now, there aren't any props to see at any of these books. So unfortunately, we can't bet rounds or knockouts. But obviously, you know, books will probably throw those out there as we get closer to the fights.
Malik, I could have told you that Shakur Stevenson wasn't knocking out his opponent there. Anytime Shakur faces a guy that is either a bigger puncher than him or a perceived bigger puncher than him, Shakur relies on his skill to win these fights. And he is incredibly skilled. He's going to be tough for anybody to beat in a 12-round decision. But, you know, his instinct is to try to outbox bigger guys. And he even said it afterwards. Like, and I was a little leery of his punching power, even though this guy's fought nobody that he fought, but he's a bigger guy, had a decent right hand, at least showed it in other fights. Yep. That was an easy one, man. I could have given you advice on that.
Next time I'll come to you for my picks.
You know, again, you said no prop bets, but like, what about predicting knockouts in these fights? Anything there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously these guys, you know, you've got three really big punchers, right?
Yeah.
Charlo, you know, lines only. I mean, this guy loves searching for knockouts. And he is same type of, you know, big puncher. To be honest, I feel like I'm leaning more towards, in a way, as far as the guy who could potentially get the knockout. You know, he's fighting someone who, you know, hasn't fought since 2019, since October 2019. Never fought in the States. And, you know, in a way, I think is one of those guys who is still looking to show the U.S. population who he is, right? He fought Maloney, and I mean, the punch that he hit him with, you know, was unbelievable. I mean, that was the first time I think anyone who hadn't seen him before really got an opportunity to watch him. And for such a small guy, you see the power that he has at that weight. So I'm leaning towards him. Obviously we need to see the odds to see exactly, you know, whether it's a worthwhile bet, if it ends up being, you know, just as high as something like, you know, Shakur Stevenson had -250. I would imagine it's probably not the smartest bet, but he seems like the kind of guy who is in search of that big punch to kind of put himself on that stage. And give himself the type of, you know, showing that would put him on SportsCenter.
Now, he's a titanic puncher, no doubt about that. And look, beating Maloney the way he did, it kind of shook off what I wondered if there would be any kind of ripple effect from the decision against Donaire, where he took a pretty good beating too in that fight. Sometimes you see some fallout from stuff like that. I would bet on Inoue to score a knockout. I'd also bet on Charlo, though. I mean, guy he's fighting, you know, his claim to fame, and we talked about this earlier in the podcast, but his claim to fame is fighting, you know, or knocking out the artist formerly known as James Kirkland, you know, his last fight. Like, you know, it's before that, you know, he was life or death with Hugo Centeno, who Charlo destroyed. And before that, he was pancaked by Jaime Munguia. So like, it's, I think that's like, I've made no secret. I'm no fan of that fight whatsoever. And I wouldn't be surprised if Charlo gets him out of there inside five rounds. Like, that to me feels like a very safe bet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing with Charlo too is he's fighting in Texas, so you know he's going to be motivated by that. He's fighting in Houston. I would not bet against Charlo getting a knockout. That's for sure. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, absolutely loves to put on a show, right? Like, that's his whole thing. Before the fight, he likes to put on a show. During the fight, he likes to put on a show. After the fight, he likes to put on a show. So I think that depending on where the odds come, I think that ends up being a pretty good bet too. And I agree, you know, obviously knocking out James Kirkland is, like, you know, at this point is really not something I think you would put on your resume. But, you know, that unfortunately is the fight that will probably be the one that has the most intrigue among all of these, because we're not getting the Lopez fight that we all hoped that we would get. But COVID definitely took that away from us, and that's unfortunate.
Let me tell you something. Like, I think Munguia probably walks through Zeremeta because, you know, Zeremeta was non-competitive against Gennady Golovkin in his last fight in December. But if I was betting on any underdog, it might be him. Only because, like, Munguia is just so untested. You know, he's a big puncher, but at 160, he has not... I mean, he was really good against Turiano Johnson. I'll give him credit for that. But before that, Spike O'Sullivan, he got hit, rocked in that fight. And Spike's not a huge puncher at 160 anyway. Like, that might be one, like, if I was willing to lose a few dollars, like, I might be willing to throw something on Zeremeta there. Just based on the fact that Munguia is still very much an unknown.
And he's so young too, right? He's 24 years old. So, you know, there's a ton to learn. I mean, I remember the first time I saw him was against Saddam Ali, and I was not expecting him to absolutely demolish him, but that was the first time I was like, oh wow, who's this kid? But you know, boxing is one of those sports where you only get the experience from actually doing it. You don't get the experience from watching it. You have to actually be in the ring, and you know, these guys can easily get tested at any point in their careers, especially when they're young. So I'm with you. I mean, you know, there's as I said before, anything can happen in the sport, right? You expect things to go one way, and you know, on a night where everything should happen a particular way, somebody could end up, you know, winning you a ton of money because they ended up getting lucky. So it's most certainly a possibility.
Yeah, no question. All right, Malik, well, we'll talk more as the summer moves forward. We got some big fights, Fury Joshua. That's me optimistically saying that. Fury Wilder 3.
It's going to happen, I promise.
Pacquiao against Errol Spence would be a good one, too. I'm sure there'll be a lot to talk about gambling-wise on those fights. Great to catch up, man.
Thank you, Chris.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is brought to you by FanDuel.
Never played FanDuel Fantasy before? Great! FanDuel is offering users the chance to play free, no deposit required, with a free entry to an NBA contest. Plus, for those who want to deposit, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with our 20% deposit match. Why do you play on FanDuel? FanDuel Fantasy is an easy-to-use app. Pick a new team every game, different and unique contests across sports in relation to your skill level, compete against your friends in head-to-head matchups. FanDuel is offering users the chance to play free, no deposit required, with a free entry to an NBA contest. And FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with our 20% deposit match. Go to FanDuel.com/Cowherd to sign up today. That is FanDuel.com/Cowherd so they know we sent you. FanDuel, more ways to win. So, you're a sports fan. That's why you're listening, baby. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. And I'm all over it like Revis Island. I have nothing but great things to say about it. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app was recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can see the latest picks and articles from Action Network gambling experts, as well as personalities like Colin Cowherd, compare odds from different sports books, and track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So, if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smarter.
All right, Anderson Silva is a former UFC middleweight champion. He's widely regarded as one of the best mixed martial artist fighters of all time. On Saturday, he will try his hand at boxing when he takes on the former middleweight champion, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. That's a fight you can watch on Fight Pay-Per-View. And Anderson joins me here on the show. So Anderson, as recently as late last year, you were still a UFC fighter. Tell me how this Chavez deal came together.
Well, this is the opportunity to come to me, and I'm preparing my mind, preparing my body, and I never stopped training. And the people ask me about this opportunity, and I say, yeah, I'm inside. You know, especially in this card, you know, with Julio Cesar Chavez and Hector Camacho. He's a huge legend here in Mexico. I'm very excited to be here.
When you were done with the UFC, did you think then you wanted to get into boxing?
No, I just never stopped training, you know. But the opportunities come when you prepare, when you stay prepared for opportunities, you know. And I never stopped training. I never stopped doing my job, you know. And that's I'm here, you know.
Did Chavez Jr. come to you and ask you for this fight?
No. Is it the promoters?
When they did, I mean, were you immediately open to it, or was there any hesitation on your part?
No, I don't have hesitation on my part. You know, I'm just in vacation with my family, visit my parents in Brazil, and the people call me. You're interested in to fight boxing in Mexico with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.? So I say, yeah, why not? I'm continue training, and the moment the people call me, I'm just training boxing. And when I'm not fighting MMA, I just train jiu-jitsu and keep straight my technique in boxing. And I say, yeah, let's do it.
How would you describe your boxing skills?
Well, I practiced boxing for many, many years. And I fight amateur, professional. Not, of course, not the same level, but I just enjoy, you know. I love boxing, you know. I'm a big fan for the boxing world, and I have opportunity, you know. I'm prepared, and God gave me this opportunity. I'm very excited.
You are a tremendous MMA fighter, but we have seen in several high-profile fights MMA fighters have been demolished by boxers, from Conor McGregor to Ben Askren. What makes you think your fight will be any different?
Oh, it's fight is fight. You know, you can compare. I can't say, oh, it's different because this or that. You know, I can't give the response for you about that, because the different fight is a different game, you know.
You know, Chavez has been a world champion boxer in the past. He's been pretty good. I mean, how do you beat a guy like that?
Wow, that's the good question, you know. And I just go do my job, you know. I go do my job, everything I train with my coach, and showing my respect for the sport.
How long have you been? You mentioned you had been boxing for a long time, but how long have you been training for this particular fight?
6 months.
Do you feel like your skills have improved over that time?
Absolutely.
In what way?
Just continue training, and I'm become better and better every day. You know, I have a good coach, and I have Coach Doria with me. He's my coach for many, many years, Coach Nico. And my sparring partners is professional boxers. And little Nico, Gabriel, my son, and Eliezer is a professional fighter and help me a lot.
Do you hope this is the start of something new for you? Like, is this just a one-off in your mind, or do you hope to do more of this?
Maybe. We'll see, you know. After Saturday, I can respond for you. I promise.
You've been, as I mentioned, maybe the greatest middleweight champion in UFC history. You've been a confident guy going into your MMA fights. How confident are you going into this fight?
The same. Fight is fight. You know, when you have the first contact, everything is the same. you know, just the one thing is change the rules.
That's a pretty big change, though.
It's not.
But I mean, do you consider yourself a great striker?
No, I'm for myself. I think I'm good fighter, good MMA fighter, good Muay Thai fighter, but not the best. I believe in the best not exist, you know.
So your boxing skills, though, do you feel like you showed some of that as an MMA fighter? I mean, you mentioned the rule changes, you know, are real. I mean,
yeah, rules change in the box. Rules is you need to stay ready for move your legs, for move your hands up when whole time, you know, and that's I train with my team.
Has it been, as you've been training, has it been difficult to follow those rules? Do you almost, you know, kind of instinctively go back to your MMA training and things you do in an MMA octagon?
Well, it's different, you know. It's different because in the MMA world, you train the different disciplines. In boxing, you train just one, you know. It's two different sports, you know.
So as you've watched, whether it's Conor McGregor or Ben Askren or these other MMA fighters go into boxing,
yeah,
What have you thought of that?
Well, I believe in the guys do best you can. You know, I believe Conor. I can't talk about Conor. I have a great relationship with Conor. Conor is a great fighter, is a great man, take the opportunity and do your best. You know, of course, he's. It's not the same level. Conor have an amazing boxing, but it's not the same level for Mayweather. But the fight is so interesting. A lot of people watch it. You know, everything is new one right now. The people like to see the new one. You know, the people born for see every single fight the same. The people like to see, maybe the YouTuber with the this MMA guy, maybe the boxing guy with the MMA guy, and I mean, that's brand new one, you know, that's the new show for everybody.
Do you think it's bad, though, for MMA to have so many of its biggest names go into boxing and get, you know, potentially knocked out?
No, it's not bad. I think it's good for everybody, you know, you have more options.
Have you talked to Dana White about doing this?
No, I don't talk with Dana. When I finished my last fight, I never talked with Dana and the people in UFC. I just live my life right now.
How do you, I mean, as you go into this fight with Chavez Jr., like, how do you see yourself winning? Do you see yourself outboxing him? Do you see yourself knocking him out? How do you see yourself winning?
Well, I don't know. I don't like to talk about this situation. And it's not because of boxing. In MMA too, you know, I think I go do my job and do my best. I train for proof and showing my respect for boxing world.
How has it been making weight once again?
It's good. It's good.
What is the contract weight for this fight?
82.5 kilos.
Do you think that Chavez Jr. is going to make it?
I don't know. I make it. I'm in a cough break, and my coach just told me, you need to eat. I'm cut too much, and I feel strong. I feel good, but I can't eat. I can't drink. I'm fine. You know, I think it's a part of the job. When you have a responsibility, you make your weight, you know. Mm-hmm. You put in the weight, you have the weight and contract, you can't lose your part. You need to do your job. It's professional.
You mentioned the word responsibility. Do you feel any responsibility to show that MMA fighters can box after we've seen so many MMA fighters get just demolished in the boxing ring?
No, I just take the the moment for enjoy. You know, I'm here with my coach, with my team. My father come to Brazil for see my fight. And I'm very happy. You know, I'm very happy. I have my whole team, my whole family here with me, my team. And I just go to do my best. And I train hard. And the one concern I have is just that I talk to my coach. I need to prove my respect for boxing. I can't go inside the sport and don't do my best. You know, doesn't matter what happened, win or not win. But I go prove my respect, especially here in Mexico. The people love boxing. Boxing is very traditional here. And in my side, for show you for the world and my fans, I just come to do something I love. It's fighting. This amena is fighting. And when you prepare your mind, you prepare your body for that, you can do something special for inspiring people. You know, that's my obligation for the world right now. And this amena happen in your professional job. You need to do something with your heart. That's what makes successful. Of course, sometimes you have problems, you have difficult, but when you make something in your mind and doing something with your heart, you make successful. That's my part right now. You know, I don't need to prove nothing for anybody. I need to pass the good message for every single person in the world, you know, and that's what I do right now.
Landerson, good luck on Saturday.
Thank you.
Against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., Fight TV pay-per-view. Thanks for joining me. All right, that's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Idek, Malik Smith, and Anderson Silva for joining the show. We'll be back with you same time next week.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.